Det här är Linus på baslinjen, en podcast om och för svensk tennis.
Hi and welcome to a brand new episode of Linus på baslinjen podcast powered by Zenis. What is Zenis? Zenis is a smart tennis solution with electronic line calls and challenges, instant performance feedback in real time, comprehensive stats, game insights, video highlights and a whole lot more, both on the court and on your smartphone. For more information, visit zenis.com or find them on Instagram, Zenis Smart Court. Today, we have a Belgium guest in the podcast, Gert De Meijer. Gert have worked at the Flanders Tennis Association in Belgium for many, many years, and now he's coaching at the Wilson Luxellon 10-key Academy in the same country. Since 2 years back, he's also part of the coaching team for the Swedish Tennis Association's program with camps for the junior national teams. In this great episode, we talk about the structure of tennis in Belgium, the positives and negatives with academies, federation programs and private setups. We talk about Gert's view of the level of the Swedish junior tennis and what we're good at and not so good at. We're talking about balancing between closed and open drills, Gert's view of rally length, how he works on serve and return, and what he would like to change in Swedish tennis if he was the big boss with all the power in his hands. We start this episode right now. Welcome, Gert De Meijer. Now I have the big pleasure to welcome Gert De Meijer to the podcast.
Hi, Linus.
Was it okay?
It was pretty okay. Nice pronouncing. Really good.
Really good. I gave it a shot. I would like to start with a little bit about your background, Gert. First, can you tell us where you're based today and your work today? What are you doing, more or less?
At the moment, I am based of our work in Hasselt, that's Wilson Luxon 10-key Academy. For the moment, the biggest one in Belgium, and on private level. And so I said it's based in Hasselt, and yeah, it's a nice job. We have a lot of players, a lot of coaches, a lot of challenges, so really nice to do. Before that, I spent it altogether around 20 years working for the Belgian Federation. First 4 or 5 years on the regional level and then full-time on the national center.
Okay, yeah.
And before that, my background is I graduated as a sport teacher.
Okay, okay.
And after that, I started to coach on in small clubs, all different of levels, from kids to starters to adults. Built up from there and got more and more involved in better tennis, in better clubs, in regional practices, in regional selections. And from there on, it went to high performance.
Okay, okay. Is it an your academy today, is that an high performance academy or is it like all kind of levels and ages?
It's all kind of level of ages.
Okay.
From kids tennis also to adults, but we have a lot of performance players and also high performance players, but it's based, it's a healthy base. I think it's really difficult in Belgium to only focus on high performers because then it's financially really tough to survive. And so at the moment it's like this, that you really need the base from a lot of kids, there's a lot of adults, a lot of hours who create a really healthy base, and from there on you can invest and create a high performance structure also in the same academy.
Do you get the best players in Belgium to your academy, or do the best players work with the federation's program?
It's a little bit both. At a certain level, and we might come to that later, at a certain level, they have the opportunity, some of them have the opportunity to choose to go either to the federation program or go to a private club. And if they decide to go private club, then our club is one of the options. But some of them stay at the clubs where they were raised or where they were started as a player. So okay, we have a lot, but there are also some different clubs who have players, and there are also some players who choose for the federation program.
Okay. You worked for the federation before, and now you're at the academy. What do you find most exciting?
At the end, it stays the same. And the challenge is to motivate young players on a long term. I think that's the biggest challenge we have. If you pick up players at the age of 12 and you start to work with them, it's different environment. In that way, in the federation, you have less players, so more time to spend with them. You so can see, is it always an advantage if you're really spending a lot of time with the players? I don't know. It can be. In the private, it's more, there are more players, there are more things going around. Players go most of the time also home after the practice, totally different situation. You have to find a good cooperation between a school and the private system. Because if you speak about the program of the federation, there's also included the school who puts out a lot of facilities. So that's good. I don't prefer neither this or neither that. The job is the same.
It's
different environment, and it has its values both, I think.
Okay. And just touching down a little bit on the school situation there. How do the kids go in, the kids that are on high level that are either in the academy or with the federation program, do they go in a normal school, regular days, or they have a special setup with the school in Belgium?
The setup is, there are a few possibilities. Either you go to school and you go full time to school and you have no facility, no exceptions, and you have to go from 8:30 till 3:30 to school in Belgium. That's a normal day, except on Wednesday afternoon, everybody is free, and on weekends also everybody is free.
Okay.
So some players only practice after school.
Okay.
And then if I look to our situation, we have a really good cooperation with the school, with the big school.
Okay.
And it depends on your level a little bit, but minimum, you can get out of school twice in a week.
Okay.
So that means that players at the age of 12 and 13, they can leave school for around 4 hours. And most of them, it's structured this way that they leave school on Tuesday and Thursday morning. So they only have to start at 10:30. So we do a tennis practice from 8 till 9:30, and then they shower, and then we bring them with a minivan to school. But that way you can have two really good practices during the day, and if you add the Wednesday afternoon, and you have some evenings, so that makes it a little bit more easy.
Okay, good. So is this a sports school, or is it like that in all schools? No,
it's not in all schools like that. It's this school has a long time cooperation with the academy, but also with the football, the soccer team from Racing Genk.
Okay.
And so they have this kind of facilities you can use, and so that's really good.
Okay. Ah, cool. Can you take us through, Gert, a little bit?
In general terms, the structure in Belgium from when a player is young and they play in the clubs, and when from what age do the federations start their programs, and when do they go to academies, maybe? In general terms, how does it look for a player?
Okay, let's start on the 12, because one thing in Belgium they do really well for me is looking for talent on a young age. So they create a system where talent is really early spotted. And also coaches or clubs can bring in young kids and take a little video, send it to the federation coaches. And some of those kids are invited to a kind of national day to train together, to do some tests together, motoric skills testing and all those things. And then they get in a kind of system where they have a kind of follow up. And they do that till the age of 10.
Okay.
And between 10 and 12, they make a kind of what they call the national team selection. And that selection means that if you're selected through some results, some skills, attitudes, then you train still in your club, you stay at your club, but you're invited once or twice, depends a little bit on the age, a week to train together.
Okay.
But Linus, maybe to make that more clear, is you, everybody has to know that Belgium is a really little country. And then it's even cut into two. So we have the north and the south part. We speak different languages. The south part from Brussels speak French. We speak Flemish on the north part. Yeah. And we also have two federations.
Yes.
So what it means is that it's so little. If the Flemish Federation is based in close to Antwerp. So if a coach there steps in his car, he drives to the east. Yeah, maximum 1 hour is on the border of Germany, so he can spot every talent over there, or he can cooperate with club coaches very easily. And it's the same when he drives to the west, and it's even closer to the north or the south. So it's pretty, it's really little, and in this way it's a kind of advantage to cooperate on that way.
But is the system or structure a little bit the same on both sides, like with the kids and the programs, or does it differ a lot?
There's not a big difference.
Okay.
It's strange, but I think the Flemish side the last 20 years came through with a lot of more women, and the French side, with the big exception of Justine and Anne, of course, pushed much more some boys and some men.
Why?
Good question. Good question. I think Kim had a lot of, how do you say it, when Kim wasn't in the media, she has a really big, I don't know the proper English word to explain this, but yeah, I think she was able to bring a lot of girls, young girls, to play tennis.
Okay.
And I don't know if Justine and I, who had better tennis results at the end, was able to do the same on the French side. Although she's still working in tennis. She's on academy on the south part, so in the French part. She's doing a great job over there. But yeah.
I think in Sweden today, we talk quite a lot about that we lack role models, that we are missing some high level players today for the kids to look up to. If we look back in time, did that matter a lot in Belgium with Kim and Justine for the future success?
Yeah, for sure. If you have players like that, then in Belgium there was tennis on the television of every Grand Slam, every important tournament. So that brings a lot of people to the tennis clubs, and that brings a lot of young kids to the tennis club. Everybody wants to pick up a racket. Every young girl wanted to pick up a racket and start to play. So yeah, that's really a big difference.
Okay. Back to the structure. When the players get up in age a little bit, is the normal way for them to go into an academy to have a private setup, or to work with the federation more later on in their stage?
Yeah, so if we go back a little bit, then we arrive at the age of 12.
Mm.
And at 12, they organize a big selection day. And then in that selection day, try to see, okay, this player is able to make it really through a professional career or not. And if the answer is yes, then it starts, and there are two possibilities. If the answer is yes for you, Linus, and the answer is also yes for me, that's the most easy way to explain, then you can choose. Either you go to the federation and you stay there most of the time in a boarding school, and you live there, you train there, you go to school there, everything is there. Or you can choose and stay at your club, because I said, okay, I trust my home environment, we have what we have to have, and I can choose my own school, and I like being home, so I prefer that.
Mm.
Both, you can choose. You're free to choose. The only thing is, or one of the biggest differences is the financial part. If you choose to go to the federation, then it's much cheaper than you stay in the private part. And when I speak about match, it's really a big difference.
Okay, because the federation pays your practice and your program. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. But what is the most common way? Like, it's 50-50 or what? Yeah.
It depends a little bit on certain generations, certain age groups. I think earlier years, 20 years ago, I think everybody went to the federation. Mm. The last 10 years, it was, I think, 50-50, a little bit like that.
Okay, okay. What do you think is the best way to go?
I think at this moment, and I was on the other side also, and at that time I really defended the federation. I thought it was really the best thing to do.
Mm.
If now, the last years, I'm on the other side, and I also see that it's possible over there.
Okay.
So there are in not so many clubs or in not in so many private structures, I think it's possible, because you really have to have everything set up really well, like school, enough coaches, travel coaches, whatever, good fitness coaches. So you need all those things, but it is possible on the private. And if I would put out a system, then I think I would for sure keep the players in the clubs till they are 15 or 16.
Okay.
Let them develop there. Let maybe a few federation coaches go and visit some clubs with advice and then help where it's necessary. When they get older, then maybe the federation can do a little bit more, instead of bringing some boys groups together, travel with them together, or help it set up a more private structure around some good girls. I think it's a long way, and tennis changed a lot last year, so much, Elenis. If you see, you have of course some exceptions, but if you see the average age to get into the top 100 changed really a lot. And so I think it's smart if you said, okay, till 15, 16 you stay in your club, if you have there all things done, then from there on you can see what you have to do. But if you're 15, 16, it's still 6 years to get maybe close to the top 100. So that's a long way.
Yeah, it is. Do you have some kind of structure in Belgium during the transition years between the juniors and seniors? How do Belgium help the players in that stage of the career? Which is an important step and sometimes problematic.
it is because that's a big, if you're a good junior and you get out of that and you're really treated by sponsors, tournaments, you treat like a queen or a king if you're a top junior.
Definitely.
And then one week later, you have to go to I don't know where in the world to play some 15Ks in some hotels and some clubs where
You go from full hospitality on the Grand Slams to 15K in Sharm.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Sorry for the coffee.
Yeah, go ahead, no problem.
So the federation helps there a little bit. So what they do is the last years, because it changed also the last 2 years, people can still go and train in the federation. They are welcome there. Even when you're not training full time, if you say, okay, I want to practice a week there, they try to arrange it. Because but some people stay training full time at their private structure.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Financially wise, the last year they have a budget for players with a certain ranking. Depending on the age, but it's pretty tough.
Okay.
It's really tough. And it's
like how tough?
More tough. It's more tough for those who are in the private structure instead of those who are in the federation side.
Well, it's tough for criteria to get help.
Yeah.
But then it's not for the best of Belgium tennis. The system is built for the players that choose the federation way then.
I'm happy you make that the thought. Yeah.
Okay. I understand. All right. I would like to get into Swedish tennis a little bit. Because you, since 2022, you have worked for the Swedish Federation as well. What's your role and in this project?
Okay, somewhere around that time, Jonas Svensson got his job, what he's doing now, and he called me up and said, listen, I try to have a kind of restart with building up new things, and do you prefer to be a part of that? And I said, yeah, okay, what do you expect? So he said, yeah, first of all, we're going to start with, we have national camps, and I want really good camps. We have a high performance practice over there, and I want you to help us. So that's how it started. So I was invited, not only me, but also some other people, to have high performance camps and being on court. And as you know me a little bit, that's where I like to be the most. But because I'm still a big believer that the difference is made on the court. Huh? And so that's where it started. And that's what we are doing the last years. And from there on, sometimes there are some Swedish players passing by our academy also. And or there's a team sent over. so, yeah, that's a little bit how it started and what we still are doing now.
And when you in the beginning, when you come to Sweden to coach on these high performance camps or these national camps, what do you do then to make a difference during a few days like that at each time as a coach?
Yeah.
What do you focus on?
Yeah, the focus we put on this was teaching the kids. Okay, what is a good warming up? What is a good practice? If you want to be really, if your dream is to, because a lot of kids have the dream to be a professional player, but they have no clue how to act and get there. So we try to teach them how to train, how to warm up, how to cool down. We also try to do some what we call some tryouts. So, okay, if it was my player, I maybe would change this or this and this. And what happens if we try out this? With certain players, and then in the best world it goes also back to the private coach. And we are investing there at the moment, and that's really what we are doing the last months, really try to create a system where we can communicate very easily and try to do that better than maybe out of the first camps. Share our information with the home coaches and that way maybe the player for the best of that player.
Okay. Do you get the feeling that the home coaches are interested in that kind of communication? Are they eager to get the information?
Difficult to answer. It's not because I don't want to answer, but at the moment I don't see so many private coaches. So okay. It's difficult for me to say. I hope they are.
Yeah.
I hope they are.
Of course you hope, but
yes, but I hope that kind of attitude is there. And if not, then we have to create, because it would be pretty stupid to think you can do everything alone.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And if you have some, I think we respect a lot the club coaches who do the job on a daily basis. Mm. And if you can combine that with our thoughts, what we see, our experience, I think taking out the best of the two worlds is the best for the player.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking the players on these camps, are they 13, or what ages are we talking about?
Yeah, they start at the age of 13. We just finished our camp in Sundsvall with a new group, and that was the age group born 2011.
Okay. And I'm thinking when you said that some of the things are like you teach them, like the warm up, the cool down, how to practice on a high level. Do you think that's okay that they still need to learn that when they go to a national camp when they're 13, or should they already know that from the club, like what the club have taught them earlier?
Mm.
In the best of the worlds.
I think they don't have to know everything at that moment.
Mm.
But for sure, and that's no secret, I also told it in my presentation in Stockholm, I think it would be good for Swedish tennis if we had more and better players on the age of 12. Mm. I think that's a good goal to set up. We need more of them, we need them better, and we need them earlier. That was kind of my sentence I put out. And that's a really, really nice challenge.
Mm-hmm. And when we say that they in the best of the worlds, they should be a little better, what mm-hmm. do you wish them to be better at when they go from 12 to 13?
We see still some technical issues, not with every player, but I think too often some technical issues who in the best world, again, we're not there.
Mm.
And maybe also are difficult to change on a little bit later age. Eh? If you speak about changing forehand grips or things like that, it would be good if you don't have to do that anymore at the age of 13, 14. It's possible, but it takes some time. Eh? Mm. So technical issues we see. What we also see is physically wise, and that's not me. Yeah, we have some people involved from the Swedish Olympic Committee, and if they test our young players, then they have to say, "Phew, a lot of work to do." And connected with that a little bit, then we speak about also, I think I would like to see better movers also on court. And that's connected with the physical, but that's also a little bit technical. It's about, okay, when do you go for close stance, open stance, how do you move, overcross steps, all those things that could be better.
Okay, okay. If we compare with your experience from Belgium, are we far behind Belgium, like in these ages?
I think on those three things, yes.
Yeah, okay.
But let me add also some good things, because it's not only a bad thing. Eh?
Let's go. I promise I was going to go there as well.
No, but I said also that during that presentation that something is in those Swedish players what I really like, and in the way they can, with the skills they have, they perform well. They're able to really play matches on a good level, win points and win matches, what I didn't expect. So, and that's a value, that's a really big value it's difficult to teach that.
Why do you think we are good at that? What's your reflection?
No idea.
No?
No? Maybe you can help me with that.
No, I don't know either. But if it's just pure luck, then maybe next generation will not have it. So it would be good to know maybe why.
I think it's also, it goes maybe a little bit together with my second thing. I think young people in Sweden are pretty independent. Although a lot of coaches tell me also, parents are too much involved, they're carrying the bags, they're spoiling them. Okay, that's true. But I never see in Belgium, I took as an example, my first camp in Veldshopping, some people had to take the train for 5, 6, 7 hours, had to change the train twice, and they were 12, and they're doing that on their own.
Yeah, which is pretty good, pretty strong.
No one in Belgium, no parent in Belgium would really put the daughter or son on a train and say, take 6 hours train and go and practice for a weekend. No one would do that.
Okay. Yeah, that's
so
interesting.
So maybe it's a little bit that connection.
Yeah. Maybe it can be. One thing I'm curious about in Sweden, it's for a long time been a lot of talk about like in the today's generation practice less by themselves. What we in Sweden call spontaneous tennis, like they go down to the court, they just play, have fun, and that's one of the reasons Sweden has lacked the results the last couple of years. Is that common in Belgium that the players actually practice by themselves without the coach that much? And is that a part of the success? No.
We have not. No, that's not what we do in Belgium.
Okay. No. Okay.
But we have a lot of national tournaments. For sure during the holidays or school holidays. So people are able to play also on the 12, a lot of matches there. But that's not really just go out with friends and play.
Okay.
So we don't have that history.
Okay. One of the things that we believe quite a lot about in Sweden is the success of teams. What's your view of how team works, and do you believe in that for the future?
What do you mean by team? Do you mean a team of players or a team of
Team of players, to put that they practice together, they travel together, they do things together, which was a part of the success in Sweden before. My view maybe today is that it's more individual setups today. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah, two different thoughts. I think it's important to modify really the age then where we speak about. And then for sure there might be a big difference between boys and girls if you speak about that. If you see to the French Federation, who they select 3-4 players, put up one coach, and they do everything together. How they go through the juniors.
3-4 players and one coach.
Yeah, and that's what they do. So I think boys need that a little bit, that environment of competition and pushing each other and play with each other. And of course, technical work has to be done and tactical work, individual work has to be done. But yeah, I strongly believe they learn a lot by pushing each other and compete with each other, for sure. I think girls can go also a long way with that, but at a certain age, 16, 17, things start a little bit more in being individual.
Okay.
So there are some exceptions, but most of the time it's a little bit more when they get older then.
Yeah.
And they passed, I don't know, I don't want to say 25, 26, and then they like being with other players more again.
I see. Okay. From what you have seen of the Swedish coaches, Gert, what's your view of the level of the coaches in Sweden?
This is a difficult.
you can
answer.
Be honest here as well.
Yeah, I can really be honest. Okay, who did I met as Swedish coach? Really, that's 20 years ago. I started to work together with Johan Hepsberg. So that was a pretty good one. We shared a lot of things. Then from there on, okay, Jonas Svensson, I met a few days later. I think he's also a committed coach with a lot of passion for what he's doing. And then I met Dave and you, traveling somewhere in the world. So I respect Dave also a lot with what he's doing. But it's really difficult, it's not because I don't want to say, but it's really difficult to put really spot on, said, okay, this is how Swedish coaches are working.
I understand,
Okay, well, I can say, the question is, has Sweden enough really good developing coaches? Coaches who can really bring young players through a kind of process and build technical-wise, tactical-wise, really good young players? I don't know, maybe there is. But it might be a conclusion when you see, okay, at the age of 12, there are too much technical issues. But it might be not the coach's fault, because if you don't have enough hours to do private sessions and you can only do group sessions, you can have the best knowledge about building a player, but then you have no chance to do it. So it's a combination of a lot of things to build. As an example, a good technical player. You can have the knowledge, you can have whatever you want, but if you have no private sessions, you have not enough hours on court with the player, then you have no chance to build that.
No, I totally understand. So maybe it can be coaches, or it can be the structure and the environment, of course. Do you think... I don't know how to explain this, but when you started to help Sweden on these camps, both you came from Belgium, also Vinicius Oliveira came from Spain to help out, and so on. Do you think it's in general a good idea for federations to bring in coaches from abroad to get another perspective and to get another opinion? Is that better than to let younger coaches help out on these camps, feeding balls? If you see my question.
I think it's always a smart idea as a federation, but whatever you do in your life is to leave a little bit open eyes and don't close in. I think that's always a good idea. Of course, bringing in Swedish coaches in camps is also a value. It can might be also a goal to educate coaches. But the main goal of what we were doing there is working with those players. And at this moment, that's still the main goal. Although the idea is in the next camps, and that's something what's coming from next fall, the camps will be spread out a little bit through Sweden. And we will invite by some coaches who work with performance players living in that region, we will invite them one day also at the camp.
Okay.
So that's something we want to add.
Okay.
Okay. How can we be in those camps and with the knowledge and experience what's in those camps? And it's not only about not my knowledge, it's also Swedish knowledge, to be clear. How can we share that with coaches who are also involved with performance players? Okay. So that's the next step. But the main thing is still, the players are the main thing.
Yeah, okay, I see. And how do you, or I don't know if it's you, or maybe I should ask that to Jonas or someone, evaluate if this project is being successful? Is that by the results of the players in the later stages in the juniors, or?
It is.
I guess at the end of the day, yeah.
You can say what you want. You can say, yeah, we have to, we build a whatever. But at the end, the result is is the benchmark.
Obviously, yeah.
And but it needs some time. It started with a kind of sentence where they said, okay, they have to be on the bus for Le Petit Zas or Kunia Kana super categories. So that's the first step to take.
Yeah.
And do they have to win there? If somebody is able to, okay, really good.
Of course.
Go for it. But you have to be near there. Yeah, you have to show you can compete on that level, I think, on the age on the 14.
Yeah.
And then from there on, it goes, of course, at the end, it is about being a pro player and playing Grand Slams and winning titles. That's the goal at the end, for sure.
Yeah. So I guess if this started 2022, we need a couple of more years to see if it has worked or not, I guess, or many more years.
Yes, and that's one of the problems I see in a lot of structure of federation is that they might change their vision too often or on a short term.
Before you can actually evaluate it, yeah.
Of course, you have to be critical and you have to adapt and you have to change maybe here and there, of course. But let it go now for some years, and then we'll see where we get.
Yeah. Gert, if we go a little bit more specific on court, how would you describe your coaching philosophy? Which I know is a quite difficult question.
Maybe you have to ask it to some players or former players where I worked with it.
But now I'm sitting here with you.
Yeah, I know. I'm educated in Belgium as a coach, and that means that we are on a young age for sure really focused on technical development.
Okay.
So I let go of that a little bit if I see back to what I was doing 30 years ago. But still, I think it's important to develop the younger players really good on a technical level. From that makes how far you can get for like just your physical capabilities or what you can do physically wise is also making how far you can get, but for sure also technical things. For the rest, I think respect is for me really important, both ways. I try to be all my life, and I think I am, I can say, pretty honest and direct to players. A little bit what you see is what you get. Because for me it's important that takes you away. If you have to move around too much, then you will lose the goal. So that's for me really important. On court, I like to work hard, and getting older and older, I like for sure that my players work hard. I think I still put a lot of energy in, but the players have to work hard.
Do you see a difference today with, for let's say, 10 years ago in how willing they are to actually put in the work?
No,
it's the same, yeah.
There will be some things change. Okay, you can speak about, 10 years ago there were no smartphones, there were no this, but at the end, if you work with players who have a high goal and really want to achieve something, for me it's the same.
Okay.
I don't think this generation is more lazy or this generation is working harder. Maybe some of them are speaking a little bit more directly to coaches.
Mm.
I think that might change a little bit, but I think that's a good thing. But no, I don't see so many differences.
And when you said that you put a lot of focus on the technique quite early, how do you work a lot on that? Do you do it through very closed feeding, or do you do it more in open game drills, or how do you like to work on technical things?
I think first of all, I don't work myself so much anymore on the 12 at the moment. But we have really good coaches in our academy who do that, and I support them, and we have meetings together. But for sure, if you want to put out some changes in technical level, then there is a lot of close work to do.
Okay.
Although things like that changed for me, of my vision changed a little bit. Earlier years, we did a lot of more close things and stick to that a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think now the combination of doing close things and try it out the same week or the same day sometimes in some more open situations,
mm-hmm.
and then start again the next day is a little bit more common at the moment than I think 20 years ago.
Okay, and you think that's positive? You believe more in that way? Or?
Yeah, I think so. If I look what we try to put out as a schedule in our academy, it's an example of that. Long time ago, when the season started in September, there were a lot of things changed in the pre-season. Then we don't speak about international pro players, but the pre-season is a little bit there from September till November.
Mm.
And we did a lot of really close things, and we avoid and we did not play any matches or open situation because we really want to have it clear. If you've seen what we do now, is we have a kind of weak items in our club, and we put out a weak item. It can be a tactical item, but then on Monday, Tuesday, we keep that item on most of the time closed or semi-closed situations. And then Wednesday, Thursday, we keep also to that item, but then we do semi-open, and at the end of the week, we go to open situations. So what we did now is we have an item what we bring in on Monday, more closed, and throughout the week, we keep the same item in our practices, but we open it more and more during the week. Where earlier years, we would go for an item and keep it much, much, much more longer closed.
Okay. And but just to understand it totally, what can an item be, for example?
I think the last item was a defending situation on a far forward.
Okay. I see. Yeah. And then you start closed and you open it
up. We start closed.
Yeah.
And then we open up it more and more in the week. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. And then you have a new item next week, or how often do you?
Yeah, and to explain a little bit more is that in our academy we work, so every Sunday morning I send out to all the coaches the week items, and they are used in every group session or small or bigger group. Sometimes we have groups from 8 players or four courts or 3 courts,
okay.
or also some duo practices, just 2 players and 1 coach. For those kind of practices, they use those weak items. If it goes more about private sessions, then they work on individual items or goals.
But let's say a coach have a group. You send out an item, the coach have a group, and the coach know that the group in general need to work on something else, actually. Are they open to, can they make that decision, or they always need to follow the item regardless?
they have to follow as much as possible, But it is a good decision to, if you start in a certain item and you try to do something, but something pops up that's really important, then it would be pretty stupid to not go for that.
Ah, okay.
Of course, they're free to do that.
No. Okay, okay, I understand. I also wonder, Gert, in tennis, the last couple of years, it's been quite a lot of talk about the length of the rallies, that it's like 4 or 5 shots, so on. How do you work with that, both you and on your academy? How long intervals do you work in general? Do you keep it short, or can you hit for 15 minutes? What do you think about that, and how to structure the practice?
That's one of the big questions at the moment in tennis world. Everybody speaks about first 2, maybe 3 contacts. And then you look to the pro players, and then you can see, of course, the numbers and the statistics are there. But how did those guys get there? That's the big question. I don't believe that Djokovic is raised by just hitting 1 or 2 balls.
No.
No.
Probably no.
Probably not, no. So I think you for sure need a certain volume to be able to do that. We try to put him as an example. This winter, we set up also in our academy that to put a lot of effort in doing returns, as an example. Because if you put up a lot of serves, hopefully not at the last 10 minutes of a practice,
exactly.
What often happens.
Definitely.
So we try to set. Listen, guys, if you look at what's happening and speak about those short rallies and the first points, and but let's get it maybe to another way. We put a lot of effort in returning. Do a lot of returning. And if you train return, then also somebody has to serve. So that's also fixed that way. And by putting up a lot of effort in returning, I think you can create also shorter rallies there. Because they start to return better, you try to force them to take it a little bit earlier to step into the court and be more aggressive over there.
But do you then practice just the serve and return like that closed?
Then I go back to what I explained. Monday, Tuesday, maybe a lot of times. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we open up more.
Okay. Me as a coach, when I work with juniors, I find it quite tricky sometimes to work serve and return because it gets a little boring quite fast. Or no?
It depends. I think how you motivate players to do that.
How good you are as a coach was what you were trying to say.
No. But I don't. It doesn't need always a kind of setup like, okay, now we go for 20 minutes of serve and return. What we often do, and I introduced it also in the camps, we do an exercise of consistency. But normally you go out and drink after, let's say, 15 minutes. Doesn't matter how long. You do an exercise, 15 minutes, you go out, drink, and go to the next exercise. But before you go to the side of the court and have a drink, I ask players first to serve and to return and to put in 10 serves in. And if you're 10 serves in, then you can go and drink. It might be also the next time, you have to put in 10 returns. And that way you bring a lot of more return and serve exercises on maybe a short term, like it takes maybe 5 minutes. But if you do that after every exercise, then altogether you have maybe 20 or 25 minutes of serve and return practice in your 2-hour practice or whatever.
So you spread it out a little bit during the practice.
That's one way. I think you can also ask just players to serve and return for 20 minutes. And it gets more boring, but on the other hand, Linus, if they're not motivated to do that well, sorry, but then they're on the wrong court.
I understand.
That might be a problem that if the coach is more motivated, than the player, then there's a problem.
It is. Are you? Yeah. When you work on the consistency you mentioned, do you work more with targets then, or you try to work on the speed of the game at the same time, like counting shots during time, or how do you normally work with that?
It's a combination of both. But what I try to do is push players to, if they train consistency, not to play too slow, but that's what happens often. Yeah. I also like consistency exercise with movement. And if you do consistency with targets, at the end, to take the target away.
Okay.
We have that kind of drill that maybe we, you have a target above the net. You do a kind of consistency exercise for that. And then at the end, you take the target away, but they have to play the same ball. They have to be able to play the same ball without the target, but because that's at the end, that's also what they have to do.
Yeah. But when you said that, like, it's not good if they play too slow, how do you measure how fast they play? Is it like your opinion, or you have some...
It's a bit, the feeling of the coach, that's one. But the second, what we do also in the camps is what we call, we let them play 3 minutes, and we divide the zone of the court behind the service spots in three different zones.
Okay.
And they get points. If they hit really deep, they get 3 points. If they hit in the middle of that spot, then they have 2 points, and then they have 1 point. And they play 3 minutes.
Okay.
So, and then we know, if you're good on the 14, you have to be able to get above 100.
Above 100, under 14. Okay.
Yeah. And if I remember well from last week, I think most of them were above 100. Only one or two made it somewhere in the 90. So that was good.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So 3 points is the furthest back, and then two one. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And another example, what we also do often in warming up, is what we call 2 minute exercises that say, okay, we play together, and the coach asks, okay, you have to make 50 contacts together, and you have 2 minutes. And then from 50, you build up to 60, to 70, to 80. And then that's also the way to, yeah.
Okay, I see. A side note here, isn't Sundsvall's tennis facility super nice, huh?
It is. It is. It was unbelievable.
Yeah. Amazing, good.
Amazing, yeah.
Okay, Gerrit, we're going to finish with some questions I ask to all my guests here. First one, what are you trying to become better at today as a coach?
There's an example. I asked the Belgian Federation to, we have a different level of coach education. And I asked them to... if I can join the highest level again. I've done that, I completed that, but I've asked if I was able to do that again as a kind of free student. But for myself, I try to learn and to open up from the young coaches in our academy at the moment a lot. Because there's a lot of more information around the world, now than 20 years ago, different ways. We are sitting here. That was something what didn't exist 20 years ago. But there is also a lot of, I think, bad things going around. So I asked my young coaches to make a kind of selection over there. They're more, they can do it better than I. You know, on the other hand, I try to be, if I look to myself, I'm a lot of more patient if I look back. That's by getting older. I know, but I have a lot of more patience than earlier years.
Okay, but that's a good thing, I guess, right? Yeah. If you could go back in time when you started as a coach, what advice would you give you then from what you know today?
Play myself a little bit longer.
Okay. Okay.
And maybe start earlier on a high performance level.
Start earlier on a high performance level. Yeah. As a coach, then you mean, or
as a coach? Yeah.
Okay.
If I go back in time, what I did is, after finishing my education as a sport teacher, we had to go 1 year to the army at that moment in Belgium. Everybody was had to do that. Mm-hmm. I started, and immediately I had a lot of small clubs were coaching, training, and working every day. So I didn't find my time anymore to play myself. Mm-hmm. And then that way it took me a while before I was connected to the high performance level.
Okay. But even if you would want to work with high performance level early, so at least in Sweden, you first need to work with the younger ones and you climb your way up to the high performance. Mm-hmm. Isn't it the same in
Belgium? Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is. Okay, there are exceptions if you're a former player, or then sometimes you jump to really the job of coaching instead of educating. But most of the time, it's the same way. Yeah.
I understand. A role model or a mentor you have looked up to during the years?
Mm-hmm. There are a few, but Steven Martens is, I think, my biggest mentor. He was head coach at the Federation when I started there, and a little bit later he was also technical director.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He left the Federation and went to LTA, to the British Federation, later on. So he was for me, a good mentor.
Okay,
and still one of my best friends at the moment.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
A movie or book you have been inspired by?
Difficult to say, Linus. I'm not a big reader. No.
You're not? No? Okay.
No. Sorry for that.
It's okay. You're excused. what would you consider your biggest success as a coach?
You mean by performance or
It's a little up to you how you would how you see it.
My biggest success is that I can look back and I think almost every player I worked with on a higher level, I still have a good connection with them.
Okay.
And there's still a lot of respect, and there is not often, but sometimes contact. And it's always when I see them or when they have them on the phone, it's always really a nice. So it is also the respect is still there on both ways. And that's maybe my biggest performance.
That's a great answer. That's definitely a success. If you were the biggest boss, Gert, of Swedish tennis and could do anything you want, what would be the first thing you changed then from what you know now? Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. Maybe I have to learn Swedish. That will be the first thing I have to be able to. what I strongly believe in is that the thing started 2 years ago. And the meetings done the last half year, months, weeks, to give that a chance on the long term.
Okay. Yeah. That's the most important thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There are different ways to get somewhere, Linus. There are different ways. But you have, like we said, you have to stick to a kind of idea for a while.
Mm. Mm.
So that's important, and hopefully a lot of Swedish coaches can be inspired and do the daily work with the energy and the commitment and make the difference with those players every day. And that's something I really hope, or if I can be a value, as little as it is, if I can add a value there, that would be really great.
Mm, I see. I think my feeling is that it's positive vibes at the moment in Sweden. So I think maybe we are on the way to something positive. I hope so, and I think so.
We don't have to hope, we have to go for that. Huh? Everybody who is involved, we have to go for that, and things aren't so bad. There are some good juniors at the moment. We had a boy who played semi-final at the European Championships last year. In my perspective, we need more, because I'm quite ambitious in what we do. We need more on that level, for sure. It's good there is a kind of positive vibe, and let's keep that.
I agree. Two questions left, Gert. What do you believe in that everyone else think is crazy? You have something you really believe in that you find other ones maybe don't agree with that much?
Oh, that's a difficult one, Elias. For to answer this properly, you had to send me them a few days before.
If you don't have.
It's no, okay. I don't think I do such a crazy things. Instead of making them really work really hard, and I think some Swedish players in the first practice or the first days they meet me on court, they might think I'm a little bit crazy. But if they get to know me a little bit better and they get through those first days, then they start to understand.
Okay.
It's not really crazy what I do, I hope.
Okay, I see. Finally, Gert, anything in it can be with tennis or something else, but would you like to recommend anything? Anything in life?
It would be...
No book, I guess.
No, it's no book, no. Recommending is what I try to do is don't get to the level where you think you know everything. Learn and do a lot and learn from those mistakes maybe, but do a lot. That's something I can really advise.
Okay. Yeah, good advice. I will certainly try to follow that. Gert, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking your time and sharing your thoughts and knowledge.
Okay. You're more than welcome, Linus.
So I'm so happy we finally got to record this episode. We have actually tried for, and I'm not joking, for 2 years' time to make this happen. So super fun having Gert on this show. We have met each other a couple of times at different tournaments, and I've been on court with him once. And Gert is a great coach, and I'm so happy he wanted to share his knowledge together with us here. I would like to say a big thanks to my partners. First of all, of course, Zenis, the smart Finnish tennis system. House of Bontin, you have 10% off with the promo code BASLINJEN. Lenhof Tennis International, who's guiding Scandinavian tennis players through the American university recruiting process. I would also like to say thanks to Wilson Tennis Camp and Caxton Sports Management. A new episode is on its way, and of course, take a look at baslinjen.com for more information and content about tennis in the Nordic countries. There's also a couple of pieces in English for the English listeners or readers. Thanks again to Gert and to all you who have listened.